This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Hannah Beth Jackson and Doss Williams.
Boy, I like the name of that class, Sex, Love, and Romance. They didn't have that when I was in school. But the class isn't here, right? I'm not going to guess where they are. I was also warned, coming here, the pit, falling into it, you probably won't hurt yourself, but you will embarrass yourself. So I'm going to stay as far away from that as I can and talk to you about a subject that is... I think really critical to providing equal educational opportunity for all of our students. So first, thank you, Dr. Jarrett, for the introduction. I was afraid you were going to go through all my bills, which was my speech tonight, and that I wouldn't have much to say, but hopefully you were highlighting, I think, what are the important issues that we need to address. And I want to thank all of you for joining us this evening for this forum on a very, very important and timely issue dealing with sexual assault on college campuses. We're hearing about this from as far up in the ranks as the presidency. The White House has talked about this and that this is not a tolerable situation. We have a woman running for president who is running on issues affecting gender equality, and will, I'm sure, continue to discuss this. And in the California legislature, where, you know, we in California, we don't care if we do it right. We just like to be first. And we are first on this issue, and I think doing it right as well. So this is definitely the right time to have this discussion. It's probably actually, for many people I know who have come up to me in the last few years, or months rather, and said that, you know, years ago on college campus, they actually were the victims of rape, but they never reported it either. And this is 10, 20, 30 years ago. So these aren't people who have anything to gain by stepping forward now, except the fact that they have got enough courage to talk about an incident, and a horrific incident that has haunted them throughout their lives, and for which they've gotten no redress. They kind of incorporated it into their beings, they internalized it, and even 20, 30 years later have difficulty talking about it. So again, this is a great moment to have this discussion. I want to thank the CAP Center for hosting the forum and organizing the events around this issue, including the movie on Monday. I wasn't here to see it, but I have seen the film, and it was compelling, and if you haven't seen the film, you really must see it. It's very well made, and, you know, like anything where you have a dramatic situation, it's perfectly understated. It doesn't have to push you to the level of anger, indignation, horror, and the commitment that I think many people have when they see that film that they are going to help do something about this. And I also want to extend my gratitude to my colleague, Assemblymember Doss William, who stands with us as an ally for putting an end to campus sexual assault. And last November, you mentioned some of the hearings that were held. Assemblymember Williams and I participated in a round table right here at UCSB, and got some honest appraisals of a situation that desperately needs to be resolved here, as well as every other college in the country. UCSB is not exempt, but we're here. We represent this area, and I know that we are committed, as you are, as students and faculty, to ending this sexual assault on campus, and it always starts right at home. So right here at UCSB, I know that there are people in the audience who are committed to that as well. You know, April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and that was sort of the basis for holding the screening of the Hunting Ground. I'm wondering, how many of you came out and saw the film? Okay, so what I'd like to ask is how many didn't, so I get a sense of how many, all right. Okay, so that's a lot of people. I would love to, let me urge you to see it. It's compelling, it's well done, so you're not going to sit there and look at your watch and say, how much more do I have to endure? It's really riveting, and it's other college students and former students who have really energized this movement, and I think you will be both very impressed with their courage and very horrified by a culture that exists, that the hunting ground was able to capture, the rape culture that is bred, nurtured, and frankly institutionalized on our college campuses. And the level to which it is ignored or dismissed or condoned and thus reinforced is really extremely alarming and frankly quite horrifying. The film also, though, highlights the groundswell of student-led efforts, to shine a light on this scourge, this epidemic. I'm not quite sure there's a word strong enough to explain and to discuss how this has invaded the culture on college campuses and how critical it is that we hold colleges and universities accountable for their students' conduct. So the film identifies tools that can be used to try to combat campus rape culture, such as filing Title IX complaints against those institutions, as was mentioned. Now, Title IX has been on the books for 43 years, and many of us who are big supporters of Title IX think of Title IX as the way for to get some parity in sports and perhaps also in the sciences where women tend not to be as well represented. And it has done great things for sports, but it also is a tool that calls for schools to equally educate all its students. And this is something that there's a Title IX coordinator that's supposed to be on every college campus, and they're supposed to be proactive. This isn't the kind of thing where it's just one additional title, where you just have that title next to your name and don't do anything about it. And unfortunately, this is not a tool that has been used appropriately and consistently, and it's something that we absolutely need to see more and more of these complaints being driven by students who step forward and say, my Title IX rights have been violated. So as a follow-up to the screening, I want to share with you some of the legislation that I've been working on that aims to bring an end to sexual assault and provide advocates, survivors, and families with additional tools to achieve culture change. And that's what we are looking at. We need a culture change on our college campuses. According to the Department of Justice, 1 in 5 college women experience rape or attempted rape during their time as a student. And we know that less than 5% of all rapes and attempted rapes are actually reported. You know, I had a colleague who stood up on the floor of the state senate when we were debating the Yes Means Yes bill, and he was from South Central LA. He said, you know, it's safer for a woman to walk down the streets of South Central LA than it is to be walking on our local college campuses. When you think about that, that is a staggering admission. If you do, just think about this. It is safer to be in areas where we traditionally consider them dangerous than to be walking on a college campus, which is where we are supposed to be educating the future leaders of our state. The future leaders. That's what our university students and our college students are. So I've been a strong advocate for eradicating sexual assault for over 30 years. I served on the California Commission on the Status of Women back in the late 70s and early 80s. That's how old I am. But that's how committed I am to trying to see that we can finally do something to change this culture. And a part of it, frankly, is social awareness. And having you here, I think, is a way, you know, there is an energy, a synergy that's created by people who feel the same level of horror and indignation. And I think if you see that film, how many of you, when you saw that film, were really indignant about what you saw? I think it's that compelling. So I certainly was. I have some awareness of this issue. So it really is a very, very compelling film, and it's real. This isn't the story that's made up and you don't see cars crashing into each other. This is a film that really talks about reality. And in a way, as I said, that will hopefully move you to action. So as the state senator for this area and as the chair of the Legislative Women's Caucus, I believe we have a duty to continue to transform the culture on our campuses and make them safe environments for our students. So last year, as was mentioned, I authored SB 967 with Senator Kevin De Leon, the Yes Means Yes bill. And it was signed into law by the governor in September of this past year, and it makes California the first state in the nation to define affirmative consent. Yes means yes. No doesn't mean yes. Silence doesn't mean yes. Unconsciousness doesn't mean yes. Only yes means yes. And it requires college campuses to educate students about consent and sexual assault. It addresses the fairness of campus disciplinary processes, and if we move forward as this bill calls upon us to do, and as I hope that you will call upon this campus to do, and your friends who are at other campuses to force their campuses to do the same, we will start seeing progress. And I know now at UCSB and that the president of the University of California, Janet Napolitano, has committed to having orientations and classes and programs that address this issue very specifically. So we are moving forward in California. Are we moving fast enough? I don't know. But we are going to continue to move forward, and we are going to insist that our college students understand that silence is not consent. In this movie, one of the earlier scenes is a young man saying, hey, just because she said no, but we had sex, doesn't mean it was rape. Well, I say, what do you think it means? Of course that's rape. How is it that someone, this is a college student, granted it was a few years ago, could think or could look and admit to the fact that he had engaged in sex with a woman who had said no, without, and unabashedly so. So, you know, no doesn't mean yes. Silence or incapacitation doesn't mean yes. Only yes means yes. And I know I've said that several times, but we have to say it over and over and over again so that we won't be seeing people plant roofies in others' drinks or try to get other people so drunk that they pass out and then take videos and YouTubes of what they're doing. That's rape. That is rape. So we have trivialized the attitude about rape. In fact, the notion that people would actually take videos and put them on YouTube about of raping women who are unconscious is staggering to me. This is something you're proud of. This is something that we should trivialize. This is something we need to educate our young students, and frankly, younger than a college age, but certainly let's get college students to recognize that this isn't something to be proud of. This is something to be ashamed of and something that is criminal conduct. And if we cannot find you guilty of a crime, if we cannot, for reasons, and we know there are many, get young women to step up and to pursue cases in the criminal arena, we can certainly throw you out of school for that behavior. And we need to see more schools doing it. One of the things that was really upsetting to me in this movie is how athletes have a real serious problem with this, a sense of entitlement, is that, yes, they get thrown out of school after the football season's over. Or yes, they get thrown out of school after they graduate. Wow. That is not acceptable. So we're not doing enough. There are stories of sex offenders who've given no more than a light warning, if anything, at their universities. We know that women who step forward are accused of lying. They are put through the mill. They are given no credibility. How is that? It's the only crime. It's the only crime where the victim is presumed to be lying. And the burden is on her. No wonder so few people step forward. And then even if they step forward on a college campus with simply the hope that they will not have to be in the same class with that person or see them walking down the street, they are still subjected to the enormous stresses, not only of having been violated, humiliated, degraded, subjugated, but now they've got to withstand further scrutiny from the places they're hoping to go for some kind of help. This is just wrong. The processes today, many of them favor the perpetrators, and stories of victims so discouraged by the system they don't see any point in coming forward has got to change as well. We know, by the way, that most of these rapists don't just rape once. They continue to victimize women on campus, and it is critically important that we get them off of campus and that they are not able to continue this behavior, which undermines, again, in the concept of Title IX, the opportunity for women to have an education that is free from fear and free from violence and harm. So I believe that schools have an affirmative duty to educate their students and protect their communities from this. As I mentioned, college-age victims often feel powerless. They're restricted by lack of proof, fear of reprisal by the assailant, or fear of not being taken seriously by the police and school officials. And those fears are justified. And I think what this movie demonstrated was absolutely those fears are justified. And so a lot of these women are banding together to try to take this level of justice in their own hands. So we're hoping that Yes Means Yes is going to change that paradigm, to change that thinking and inaction. And we have made a strong statement in California that we are moving from a culture of acceptance to a culture of no excuses. No excuses for rape, no excuses for blaming the victims of rape, no excuses for not supporting these victims, and no excuses for colleges and universities to turn a blind eye to the problem of campus sexual assault. Now, in our roundtable last year, we had very, very, I think, frank and open discussions. And one of the things that we learned is that at our community colleges, and here in Isla Vista, we know that there are a lot of community college students who live here and who party here and who play here and recreate here. But the problem is that under Title IX of our California Education Code, our community colleges don't believe that they have the ability to discipline their students for off-campus behavior. We're going to change that. I've got a bill, SB 186, that will permit off-campus jurisdiction for community colleges to respond to incidents of sexual assault, which means sexual battery and rape, as well as sexual exploitation, regardless of where it occurs. You know, our students, I think most of us believe and agree that our college and university students, whether they're at the university, whether they're at our Cal State universities, whether they're our community colleges, they are the people we are looking to be the leaders of the future. Culturally, economically, innovative-wise, ethically, these students have got to be held to a standard that treats other students with respect and with dignity. And so, recognizing that it can't just start at the college level, the Senate Pro Tem De Leon and I have introduced another bill this year. This is SB 695, which is designed to target high school students. You know, we habits start before college. We know that. They probably start before high school. In fact, I'm too old to remember, but I have a sneaking suspicion they happen right around the time when boys and girls are starting to reach puberty, and they're trying to define what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman. And they look to their peers, and they look to others, and they look to our sports heroes. I was thinking this morning, who are our heroes today in today's world? Who are the people we look up to? I don't really know, but I suspect some of them are these sports figures, and you know, the action heroes. I mean, are these really the people that we want to be looking up to? People who glorify violence and mistreat women? I mean, what are the role models out there for these young, impressionable minds? Well, we decided this year we're going to start from the college level and go down to the high school level. This measure requires that in health courses which are a condition of graduation for a majority of California high school students, not all areas require health classes, but when they do, we want them to provide instruction on affirmative consent. on sexual harassment, assault, violence, and the importance of developing positive, healthy relationships. This, I think, is the crux of the matter. We must respect each other. It is not the height of masculinity to rape women. It is not the height of masculinity to degrade other people. It is not the height of being a woman to be popular by engaging in sexual acts with anybody and everybody, thinking that's the only way a woman can be popular. You know, if people want to engage in sexual conduct, it should be for good reasons. It should be because there's mutual respect and a healthy self-attitude, as well as a healthy sense of self to engage others in the conduct that you wish to participate in. So this is our next step. The bill will ensure that discussions about healthy relationships and consent are taking place in high school with young men and women so we can establish boundaries of acceptable behavior, give students the skills they may need to navigate difficult situations. These exist. We know this. There are difficult situations in all aspects of life, but if we start working from a base of healthy relationships, I believe we'll be able to prevent sexual assault before it occurs. And so last week, the Senate Education Committee unanimously passed this bill out of committee, and it will next be heard in our Senate Appropriations Committee. So I hope that gives you some food for thought. I'm open to suggestions, other ideas. We've had a terrific fellow named Jackson Katz. I don't know if you've heard of him. Come and talk about. He focuses on young men and how to help young men define masculinity in a way that doesn't degrade other people. And he's doing some great work. And I would encourage all of the young men in this room to go to that website and to perhaps be working with other with young. Younger kids, younger boys, mentor them, show them by example that you can be a strong, wonderful male without doing it at the expense of abusing other people and certainly other women. So thank you for listening, and thank you again to the CAPS Center for hosting this event. I look forward to hearing my colleague, Assemblymember Williams' remarks, and then engaging in a robust question and answer period. And I always welcome your thoughts and recommendations that help us create the legislative tools we need to end sexual assault on campus. And it is many students' dream to go to college. You are at UCSB, one of the finest institutions of higher education in the country. When you leave this institution, you should have nothing but good memories, or the only bad memories are when that professor gave you a B when you deserved an A. Does that ever happen? No, of course it happens. And that should be the worst thing that happens out of a college experience. You work so hard to get into college, and it's our duty to provide you with a safe environment once you get there. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Doss Williams. I really appreciate all of you being here and hanging out till a little late at night. You know, I'm very passionate about the idea that men have a really important role to play in ending sexual violence on campuses and in our society. I assume probably those of you that are here, you may not be part of the problem, but there's a thing that we say in social change that if you're not part of the solution, you are still part of the problem, right? That neutrality isn't good enough, that you have to take a side. And I think what that really requires from men and women, but particularly from men, is to not tolerate the parts of our culture that lead up to rape. Because I think, you know, rape doesn't begin with the act. It begins with what kind of jokes we tolerate, what kind of behavior we tolerate, whether we're not a very confrontational society, so when people say something offensive, sometimes we laugh it off, right? Even if that's enormously degrading to women, even if that's about getting someone so drunk that they'll be more friendly. And that's what we need to stop tolerating. Because those are the things about our culture, part of the things about our culture that allow men to think that they can get away with this, right? And I want to say that this is a very, very tough problem to fix. And the reasons are myriad, but it's a cycle. That survivors generally don't believe that they will get any justice, or that people will believe them, or that they will be embarrassed. And that because they don't believe that they can get justice, they do not report, and therefore there is no chance for justice. It's a cycle, it's a circle, and it is one we desperately need to break. The numbers, particularly on criminal justice convictions in rape, is horribly low. I think you can pretty much say that statistically the chances of someone being held accountable for rape is less than 1% of the cases. And so people that come to me and wonder, why do you concentrate on the college campuses? Isn't this a job for the criminal justice system? I answer because of a very practical issue. That our criminal justice system, because we decided to create a system where you have to convict with beyond a reasonable doubt, a very high standard before the deprivation of liberty, combined with the circumstances around rape that often people report. If they do report, they report after there is no longer evidence, and that sometimes there are not other witnesses besides the parties involved. Because of that, we have to look at the college campus. College campus, you all, by coming to this campus, you sign onto a code of conduct, right? And part of that code of conduct is for you not to sexually assault other students. And because of that, there is jurisdiction on a college campus for an internal procedure. Here it's handled by judicial affairs, and it is a code of conduct procedure. And it is really the best chance for justice on not only on a college campus, but anywhere in this society. It is the best chance for justice in cases of sexual assault. And so, first of all, we want to tell you there is another path for those that have experienced this, or those that know people who have experienced it. There is another path beyond the criminal justice system. We encourage people to report it to the criminal justice system, but if that's not something that a survivor wants to face, they can do a code of conduct procedure on campus. So at very least, the individual that committed the crime can be held accountable that they should not be on a college campus. A victim or a survivor should not have to go to school with that person. And perhaps even more importantly, that person should be removed, because if they do it once and they get away with it, chances are they're going to do it again. And that's one of the reasons why I depart a little bit from what is usually the standard line in these cases, which is we want to encourage the survivor to do what's the best thing for them. And I agree with that statement, but I also have to implore you to also think about what's best for every other potential survivor victim on this campus. Because if we don't find a way to provide accountability, there will be more. It will happen again. And the chances of a code of conduct can be improved. Code of conduct only needs a preponderance of evidence. It is not depriving someone of their liberty. It's not throwing someone in jail. So it does not need the same evidentiary standard. It means that in cases of a he said, she said, or a she said, or a he said, that a little bit more evidence on one side can decide the matter in the case. And that makes a much larger potential for achieving justice. Even with that, however, what Senator Jackson and myself have found in our hearings across the state, we just did another one, not an official hearing, but just us two at Ventura College last week. But what we are finding is that the numbers are still pretty low. And why is that? First, because the reporting is low. And second, because there's something else going wrong. So I'm going to say the good and the bad about UCSB. Okay? The good is that reporting is higher here than other campuses. The good is that we have a cutting-edge prevention program. The fact that there's registration holds on it, freshmen have to go through the training, and there's such things as bystander training, really puts it on the cutting edge. The bad news is that the number of people held accountable is still very, very low. But they do exist. That's important to put out there, because most survivors do not even know if anyone is facing justice. And most of the ones that were held accountable for longer than the pitifully small two quarters that one of the cases in the last few years has had. And really looking at those numbers and the numbers at Berkeley and UCLA inspired me to author a couple pieces of legislation. One is a direct result of this incident. I didn't know the people involved. I just saw the fact that the numbers were included and that one of the perpetrators was held accountable, quote unquote, held accountable with being dismissed for two quarters. And at least there is the possibility and claim out there that, even that wasn't enforced. And if you want to know just a little bit more about it, that the survivor in this case had the courage to put herself out publicly. Her picture is in this week's Independent newspaper on page 9. And I just hope that this audience, in case she's here, should give Alejandra a lot of, should give her a hand, because that takes a lot of courage, right? And one of the three bills that I'm introducing would require college campuses to essentially, in cases of non-consensual sex, to provide the accountability of at least 2 years. I wanted to do longer, but a lot of the debate centers on some survivors don't want to push for more and might not come forward if you pushed for more. That's the thought behind not having a higher amount. Because frankly, two quarters is a disgusting level of accountability, right? That bill also does something else that's just as important, is a requirement to report. Getting the numbers from college campuses, even as chair of the Higher Education Committee, was really tough. So I can't imagine what would happen if you guys tried to get the numbers, right? And those numbers should be public. The universities are supposed to report that numbers anyway to the Department of Education. We should be able to access that. The other pieces of legislation would provide the accountability of a uniform standard on a transcript. So remember, most of the issues and most of the intransigence on a college campus is this idea that a code of conduct procedure is designed mainly for academic issues, right? So, ladies and gentlemen, if you cheat on a test, it will definitely be on your permanent record. It will be on your transcript. But if you rape someone, it might not be, depending on what college campus you go to. And that's, again, under this theory of what is academically related and not. And I just got to say, being assaulted on a college campus is an academic issue for the survivor. It affects every one of their ability to come every day, to pick up their guts and walk into class, walk around a campus where they might see either the perpetrator or people who did nothing to stop them. And so we have to demand that this is academic, this is a part of a university's responsibility, and a university has to enforce its code of conduct. The last bill is similar to Senator Jackson's, except it provides one other issue. Right now, community colleges, they sometimes will dismiss students no longer than 5 years. Community colleges operate under the idea that everybody might need a second chance someday. I'm not tangling with that issue. What I am tangling with is that there are over 100 community colleges in the state, and someone can get kicked out of one for sexual assault, and in some more urbanized parts of the state, they can drive a couple miles or go two BART stations down the BART line and just enroll at another community college. So what accountability is there if you rape someone, you are kicked out of a community college, if there is no way to communicate that and no way for the college themselves to have an open decision about whether or not to admit that student? And so my last piece of legislation addresses that point. Number one, it says that if you're on at a community college campus and the college is about to admit someone who's been dismissed for rape from another community college campus, you have the right to know that there is someone that they're going to do that, and they're going to have an open proceeding and debate about whether to admit that student. So what can you do? You know, to me, I never like to talk about problems except by also talking about what we can do. Because often the collective action of hundreds and thousands and millions of people can be more powerful than what Senator Jackson and I can do in an action of law. And I think there's a lot that individuals can do. I think you heard one: come forward. Come out of the darkness. The darkness only helps the perpetrators, right? The second is what we tolerate, what kind of behavior we tolerate. The third is agitate on this campus. That's a great thing about a university. A university is not always, but often, very responsive to its constituency, student body. And if we demand that the code of conduct procedure do a better job, they will have to address it. There are different ways to handle code of conduct procedures. I don't know exactly what's wrong here, but it may be good for the administration to examine what is going wrong. Is it that the panel, that the hearing panel are, you know, professors who are more worried about the student that could lose their education than the student who was raped? Or is it just a bad luck? I don't know. But we should demand results, And you demanding results of the university, I think, will yield fruit. With that, I want to save some time for questions. I also want to note that Hannah Beth and I care a lot about this issue, so much that we decided to sponsor the film showing, because they don't always have enough money. You guys going for free is usually something that they try to subsidize. So we put our money where our mouth is, and we wanted to make sure that you guys got to see that film. With that, we'll take some questions.
We have two standing mics here, and I'd like to say three things. We want to hear first from undergraduates, if you'd be brave enough to step up with your questions. I'd also like to ask that your questions be relatively brief. You know, maybe 30 seconds is a good, at least ideal, to aspire towards. And finally, can they please be questions? For our elected officials. We all have opinions and views, and there's lots of forums to share them on. But please try to ask a question that we can respond to. And if you could please come up to one of the microphones.
Well, don't be shy.
Please don't be shy. Here, okay, we have one man. Good.
There we go.
So I'm in Dr. Jarrett's class, but I was wondering for, like, if it wasn't rape, but, like, sexual harassment or sexual assault, what would be a solution for that? How about restorative justice? I know that's not legal in California. Would that be a solution? And is that in the future at all?
Well, let me just say, I think a lot of this is going to be up to the schools as to how they want to handle this issue. You know, we're going to start assuming, I think, with orientation and new students coming in, that they're going to know what the rules are. And in something like rape, you know, there's an argument, well, like that fellow who said, well, no, just because she said no and we had sex doesn't mean it's rape. That kind of, we're going to disabuse people of that notion, at which point I don't know that restorative justice is necessarily going to be the answer. But certainly, for the victim, having the ability to tell her assailant how she felt and feels about this and getting some kind of acknowledgement, if it's determined, and I'm not a psychologist, that that is the kind of thing that will help the healing, then certainly that's something that I would hope that schools would look at. But I'm looking to the university, to all universities, to recognize that they have to take responsibility for making sure that whatever the punishment is, whatever the treatment is, whatever the program is that they adopt, is one that is going to focus on the victim and try to eradicate the behavior on their college campuses. They need to be accountable for what goes on their college campuses. And I just want to just respond, what's going on college campuses? Look, we have something called the Clery Act. College campuses are by law required to report acts of violence that go on their campus and in their adjacent areas. They don't want to do that, because if you are a parent or a student looking, wondering where you'd like to go to school, and you go online and you see that there have been a number of sexual assaults or robberies or violent behaviors in or around that campus, you are going to think twice about going there. That's not a plus for a university or a college. And so it is incumbent upon colleges to pretend like this doesn't exist. But we need to hold colleges accountable for this behavior. That there is supposedly a resolution for Title IX violations, for Clery Act violations, and that is that federal funding is supposed to be withheld. This hasn't happened once. Not one occasion has federal funding been withheld, even though when they monitor the Clery program and monitor what's going on and discover schools aren't keeping records, they're not doing anything, nothing has happened, and so that has to change. But again, I think it's incumbent upon the schools to step up and take care of their students.
You know, I think you bring up a good issue, which is what do you do with lesser matters that do not rise to the same level as rape? I think that that's an important and it's a concern that came up in my bill. You know, the first draft, we didn't define sexual assault very precisely. And we have fixed that as it moves forward, because as I told one of my colleagues, we should not get into the business of enforcing ass slapping, right? You know, that is not something that a university should prioritize vis-a-vis some things that rise to the level of, you know, actual rape. And I do want to say, just for folks, because I've actually been criticized for using the R word because it is so, it hurts so much. And I just want to say that is totally conscious. We all should hurt every time we hear that word. I want it to hurt. I want it to hurt me and I want it to hurt you, because that is just a bit of the pain that victims, survivors go through. And I don't like using euphemisms for the word, because I feel like it takes away that that power and that pain. Restorative justice programs are great, and there actually are some in California at localities. They are the decision of local superior courts to pursue those kinds of programs. So if it's something that you're interested, you should talk to the Santa Barbara Judicial Council. That's the folks who would make that kind of decision.
I know that you mentioned that there's a very low conviction rate on the low amount of sexual assaults that actually are reported. And you mentioned the Yes Means Yes bill that you passed. I was wondering if you could speak to the details of how that bill has changed the legal criteria, possibly, of sexual assault, and also if you could speak to the, if any, results that you guys that have been seen from that bill.
Yeah, there are two distinct activities going on here. Once a rape is identified, there is the criminal justice process. This Yes Means Yes only relates to discipline on a college campus. So the same standards, the same requirements will exist in the criminal justice system. So if you put that to the side, so a proof beyond a reasonable doubt into a moral certainty, you have to have all of the necessary elements so that a jury of 12 people will convict or acquit. The penalties are potentially incarceration, so one's freedom can be removed. That's not what Yes Means Yes is about. So if you would just move that thought from your mind. We are focusing upon what disciplinary proceedings can be taken on a college campus where you are not required to meet that standard, that very high, the highest standard of proof. What you're required to do is to meet a standard of preponderance of the evidence. Preponderance means simply it's more likely than not that this happened. And the way we talk about it, 51-49 is arguably the preponderance of the evidence, or 50.1 versus 49.9. And it allows the college or the university, through its disciplinary process, to address whether or not a sexual act was consensual. And in order to be consensual, there has to either be an affirmative verbal yes, or there are other kinds of nonverbal ways to say yes. And that is the focus. Saying nothing is not yes. And I think there was, I wish I had brought it with me, a very good way to describe Yes Means Yes. And the analogy is, would you like a cup of tea? I don't know if any of you saw that. It was, I think I saw it on Facebook, a great explanation. If you want a cup of tea, you say, yes, I'd like a cup of tea. And if you just start thinking about what we do with most behaviors, you ask a question and you wait for the answer. And if the answer is no, then you don't want a cup of tea. And you know, that may be trivializing it, but what we're trying to do is say that it's not rocket science to figure out that yes means yes. And in fact, it was suggested in a wonderful editorial written by Gloria Steinem, and I forget who the colleague was in the New York Times. If you look at the last page of Ulysses, where they talk, there's this marvelous a paragraph, and she said yes, and I looked in her eyes, and she said yes. And, you know, there really is something much more appealing about getting someone to yes rather than getting them drunk so that they can't say anything. So I hope that answers the question. We're really talking about a very, very different standard, a different issue, because what we're talking about is colleges taking disciplinary action for these kinds of behaviors. Now, maybe someday that will translate over into changing the laws of what rape means. But right now, we're really only trying to address a very serious epidemic on college campuses. And hopefully we can change that culture and perhaps the culture in the rest of society. But that's not what the bill does.
And we don't really know the numbers for this year yet.
Right.
The law was, we passed the law last year. And
it became effective January 1st.
That's right. Yeah. So because it became effective only 6 months ago, we don't have any numbers yet to be able to answer your question. I do also want, because we were talking about yes means yes, to make it clear to people that that the bill doesn't specify that it is verbal in nature, right? And someone at the Ventura College asked me, tell me some examples of affirmative consent. And of course, Hannah Beth gave the most obvious one. And it's hard to, because there's like hundreds. And in fact, you know, you can think about a lot of it, and it'd be kind of fun to come up with lots of different ways to have affirmative consent, right? And a lot of them are nonverbal. What is sometimes most important to indicate is what is not affirmative consent, right? As Hannah Beth indicated, silence is not affirmative consent. Someone passed out is not affirmative consent. Someone freezing up when you're, you know, trying to make moves on them, that's not affirmative consent, right? And I just think that people's, you know, sometimes people's default is to keep on moving until it's so obvious that it's no, that the, you know, an idiot would understand it. And I think it's incumbent upon men to realize that that's not the way that people work. They don't always say no when it's obvious that it is no. And by defaulting to affirmative consent, the beauty of that policy is to keep out this doubt. Where there's doubt, you don't keep on going forward, right? When there's doubt, you stop.
But the beauty is it's not a default position. You have to say yes. Yes, I'd like a cup of tea, or whatever the nonverbal signals are. Someone hands you their teacup. That would probably be a good one. Okay, moving right along. Where's our class, Sex, Love, and Romance? We need you to help us out.
Yeah, we need some help here.
Can I just follow up on that question? Because we were discussing this in our class, and I think we're relatively comfortable with the nonverbal cues. But what's less clear to us is the asking. Can the asking be nonverbal, or do I have to get down on a knee and ask permission?
Well, of course it can be nonverbal. I mean, this truly isn't rocket science. The real purpose here is to make it clear that there has to be an affirmative indication of a desire to engage in sexual activity. And it can stop at any point. When you hear no, you're done. When you say, let's do more, and you don't get an affirmative yes, I mean, there, you've got to get to yes. And that's...
I would demonstrate some, but George, Annabeth's husband, might be a little jealous. I mean, you know, there's as many different ways that you can ask someone to have sex with you as there are, you know, your own creativity. I think there is, and there are just as many ways to say to say yes. But I think that is based on your own, you know, creativity. But the idea is saying yes means yes is to say that neutrality is not yes.
Correct. Correct.
Thank you very much. Over here.
Or perceived neutrality is not yes.
Hi. Is this on? So I think there are very good intentions behind this law, but I just feel like it puts a Band-Aid on the real problem, which is a hookup culture. And so as politically incorrect as it may be, do you think it would be effective to end rapes on campus or to discourage them to, one, undermine the hookup culture, and two, God forbid, tell students or college students to reserve their sexual relations until marriage?
Well, I think that I don't think we need I don't think we're trying to do that. I think what we're trying to do with this approach is to make sure that when students want to have sex, that is clear that they are doing it volitionally and not being raped. I mean, rape is defined as unwanted sexual conduct with another person, unwanted. And that unwanted can be articulated, or at least on a college campus, has to be articulated in a positive way. Hookup culture, if two people are consenting, you know, whether or not that's a good thing or not, at least there's consent. And what I had mentioned earlier is it may beg the question, why are we seeing a lot of what you call quote-unquote hookup culture? What is it? Is it really because this is something that the both people want to do, or is there something where particularly young women think that in order to be popular they have to be engaging in this? That isn't what we're trying to do here. If that is what's going on, that may be the subject for another conversation another time, and maybe at an earlier point. I recall a book called Reviving Ophelia, which talks about this in young girls as they start maturing. Is it important that in order to appeal to a man you have to have a large chest and you have to wear provocative clothes and behave in those ways or give your sexual favors freely? Is that really what you want to be doing, or do you think that that's something you have to do in order to be popular? That's a different conversation. But regardless of what it is, it has to be clear that this is a consensual act. And that's what we're calling for here. I don't want to try to go into, you know, any of the other sort of moralistic views. We just want there to be a clear indication that there is consent.
Okay, can we all thank Senator Jackson and Assemblyperson Das Williams?
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.